I've seen like in Eastern cultures more like mine. I think like there is this belief like children shouldn't have boundaries, which I don't agree with at all. We should teach like especially young people to have boundaries and like state what their needs are. Their parents should be more willing to listen to them and not react defensively.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is a counseling psychologist in training and an integrated attachment theory coach. Apart from the IAT training, she has done her MSc in clinical psychology and has diplomas in counseling psychology and also child psychology. She's been in the personal development school for more than 3 years and has shifted her attachment style from dismissive avoidant to secure. She has a passion for helping people heal and grow in order to live their lives in the best way possible. Podcast viewers and listeners, please welcome my guest, Sanjana Kumar. Hi, Sanjana. How are you doing today?
Hi, Mike. How are you? I'm fine.
Good. I'm well, thank you. So for everyone who doesn't know, Sanjana is a PDS celebrity. She's a legend. She's been in the school over 3 years, and I think you've been to every single webinar.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the routines that I host, I always see you there. And the YouTube channel, I know you watch a lot of the YouTube channels every day. So this is probably one of our most dedicated students that we have, and it's really an honor to interview you today.
I'm happy to be here, Mike.
Oh, great, great. Okay, so Sanjana, just to start with, do you want to tell us briefly about your background and maybe a bit of your backstory, family life, growing up, basically what's brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, so I was previously a dismissive avoidant, and I'm pretty secure now since I've been in PDS since a very long time. It's more than, I guess, 3 years. So actually, if I talk about my past, it pretty much had some elements of the emotional neglect was the main theme in my childhood, which is very common for DAs, I suppose. And there was also volatility in my environment growing up. And there were instances of bullying, especially in my childhood. So because of that, I don't get a lot of healthy modeling of what relationships look like growing up. And that contributed to my attachment style. And then I had a fear of intimacy. I was afraid to be vulnerable and all of that stuff. And that led me to develop a DA attachment style.
So then in your own life, was there sort of a moment, a catalyst, a realization? Was there an impactful event, something that happened that really pushed you to dive into healing your attachment style?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I used to be very much interested in psychology. DAs have a high need for learning. So I always used to be very much interested in learning about psychology. I used to read books, watch YouTube and all of that. So I was just watching a video on YouTube, which was about attachment style. And then I started learning about all the attachment styles, and I could quickly identify with dismissive avoidant. So that's when I got interested in learning about attachment theory. And I was like, wow, this thing actually describes me pretty well. And then later on, I started discovering more videos on YouTube related to attachment theory. And then I came across Thais's channel, which was a great blessing for me, because before that, I had seen certain YouTube videos that were kind of harsh towards this attachment style and all of that stuff. So I really loved the compassionate approach that Thais provided. And that's what attracted me to her channel initially. And then I started watching more and more videos of hers. And then I started learning more about attachment theory. And then finally, I decided to join the school. So it was just a random decision in my life during that time. Nothing was like a rock bottom or anything, but it was more like I was satisfied in my career area. So I think I was feeling a little bit stagnant. I had finished my studies, I was doing a job, and then I was feeling I was stuck and I'm not getting anywhere. And later on, I discovered that I had chosen a career which was wrong for me. So I was working as an auditor, and then after I worked on my attachment style, I actually decided to do this career change to become a psychologist because I realized that's what I'm interested in. Yeah, so that was really interesting for me.
Definitely. So your career as an auditor, was that meeting a lot of your needs, or you just thought, hey, this is a pretty good job and, I can make a pretty good career out of this, but was it not meeting needs?
Yeah, that's actually the main reason why I was feeling so stuck. It was meeting needs. So the thing was, my environment was fine. The job is something I wasn't interested in. It wasn't meeting my needs. It wasn't something I wanted to do in the long term. And I was, even though their environment was fine, my colleagues were very good, supervisors were very good. There's no problem in work environment. And still I was dissatisfied. So I was sort of wondering, why is this happening? But later on, I discovered what was the reason for that.
For sure. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, definitely. I can attest to that. Some jobs, you have such amazing coworkers. You're like, oh, I'm just going to stick this out. But the actual job itself, you're like, oh, this isn't really kind of fulfilling me. This isn't making me, feel good by the end of the day. But yeah, I'm happy that you sort of found that different path that's more in line with what you're interested in and what you like. Okay, so what made you join personal development school? I know you saw the videos that kind of attracted you to the school. Do you want to walk us through what's your healing journey been like at the personal development school?
So mainly what attracted me to BDS was the compassionate approach towards DAs that Thais has, and whatever she used to explain, it used to be bang on. I used to have these moments like, wow, she is so accurate with the content. It's like she knows me pretty well. So for sure she is going to have tools that are going to help me transform. So I just joined PDS, and initially I was a little bit hesitant. Is it going to work out? Will this be fine? How is this going to go? I had a lot of those limiting beliefs. But as soon as I joined, I even remember the first webinar I did with Thais that was on emotional anorexia, which
Okay.
was interesting.
Do you want to explain that to our viewers if people haven't heard of the term emotional anorexia?
So, emotional anorexia is a state usually most commonly seen in dismissal avoidance. And so the range of emotions is restricted and the depth of emotions is not there. So they are not in touch with their emotions. Their emotions are sort of repressed. So they are not in touch with, and they cannot easily identify what their emotions are. And that on a surface level, they might look it's fine. But one of the things is if you repress your emotions, you can't experience positive emotions also deeply. So that's where the problem usually comes.
Right.
So that was something which was interesting. And I was asking Thais about, okay, I feel emotionally numb all the time. So she was like, okay, try and do some exercises where you challenge that belief. Emotions are not necessarily a negative thing. So what are the benefits of emotions? And then I started doing that. And during that time, I was also doing somatic work. So Thais had said, you need to connect your emotions to your body. So that's something that was really helpful for me. And that's what I was trying to do. But I used to not identify at all. I'm trying this exercise. I can't do it. I don't feel anything in my body. So I started doing that. After I started finding the benefits of emotions, then slowly I could feel the emotion. But whenever I tried to find sensations in my body, it used to be outside my body. It was like I couldn't feel it inside. It was dissociated way. I can visualize it, but I feel it's something happening outside my body, which is going to sound strange. But then I asked Thais again, this is what is happening. She's saying you're not feeling safe, feeling your feelings. So now I do the reprogramming work around it's safe to feel my feelings. And then I did that.
I love that. That's such
So
an important point too. You have to almost prove to yourself that it's safe to feel your feelings and why emoting is good, why feeling your emotions is positive. Because if we don't have that, we're just going to be in protection mode, right? And it's going to be a lot harder to sort of let go. Wow, that's amazing. I want to touch on something that you mentioned before I forget, how Tice uses the compassionate approach for all attachment styles, but definitely for DAs, because DAs have, you know, defective wounds and criticism can be quite hurtful. If anybody's ever been on the comments of YouTube or Facebook or Instagram on our account or any other account, people can go pretty hard at DAs. And I just want to say, you know, anybody who's interested in joining the school, no one would ever be saying those types of things. You know, on the internet, it's one thing. People are just angry. When you're in pain, sometimes you're needing to sort of let it out. But in the school, you know, we obviously treat everybody with respect and make sure you're comfortable. And, you know, the compassionate approach we know works best. If you shame someone or just tell someone what to do, you know, it's kind of like your parents when you were young, just trying to tell you what to do, even if you didn't agree with it. But compassion definitely works 100 times better than sort of shaming or making people feel bad enough for the things that are out of their control. And it was a result of their childhood. So I'm glad you brought that up about the compassionate approach. And that makes sense why you'd be sort of attracted to come to the school because of that.
Yeah, definitely. That is something that attracted me. And PDS is one of the places where I feel the most safe. Even the PDS members group is the only group on social media where I feel 100% safe. So right. Thanks for bringing that up, Mike.
How do you deal with the comments? Because like I said, I know you're in the YouTube videos every day. I know you comment all the time. When you see comments negative towards a DA, how does that sort of make you feel? Or how do you manage reading those comments?
Initially, I used to get a little bit affected, but right now I've gotten much better at it. I think what helps me is understanding the perspective of the other person. Maybe they are in pain. No one would say those things unless they are in pain themselves. So that is something that helped me understanding their perspective, and at the same time, having my own boundaries. I might not engage in something if it's very mean or something.
Sure.
In the past, there have been certain times if the person is being critical, like use the communication scripts at times in PDS, I'll respond to them in a kind manner and try to explain my point. And sometimes they do understand it. There have been certain times.
Yeah.
So sure. That's what I do. And I can. Another thing I've learned is not to personalize it. So whatever is happening doesn't have anything to do with me necessarily.
Totally. And Tice gives the example of the purple elephant all the time. If somebody calls you a purple elephant, it wouldn't bother you, right? But if somebody, if somebody's saying a comment and, you know, say you're a terrible person, you're awful, what's wrong with you? If you believe those things about yourself, it's really going to hurt. But if you work on your core wounds of defectiveness, of, you know, I'm not a bad person, those types of things, then these types of comments, like you said, you depersonalize them. You kind of see them for what they are. A lot of times other people's pain, but just know, you know, we all have work to do. We're all here trying to heal. So I'm not going to, you know, make excuses for people's unhealthy behaviors in relationships, because I'm sure we've all kind of done some of these things, but I just want to make the point of compassion definitely goes a long way. And I'm sure you can agree with that. Okay. So, you know, Sanjana, you've put in a lot of hard work to become secure, but what were some of the most challenging or the hardest things about being dismissive avoidant when you were sort of in your most DA state?
The most challenging thing I would say is, number one, is the amount of judgment I had towards my feelings. I cannot have a negative feeling without being extremely judgmental or harsh on myself when I was a dismissive avoidant. What is happening? I'm being weak or too sensitive and all that stuff. I used to be very critical during that time. That was the hardest things to be a DA. And apart from that, I had trouble reading people's non-verbal cues. That was challenging. And as soon as I could get in touch with my feelings, that was one of the changes I'd seen. I could read people better. I could pick up on non-verbal cues much better.
Wow, that's amazing. So yeah, you didn't have the language of these cues yourself, so it was hard to see them. But once you adopted them, learned them, and understood them, then they just, they're right there. They're obvious, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Wow, that's really beautiful. So what is the best thing or best things that have happened to you since you've done work to become secure?
I would say the best thing would be, like, firstly, the career change. I went back to school and then I got my degree in clinical psychology. And then after I completed, I was like glad. I was so happy about it. So that was one of the most positive things that came out of being secure. And another thing is you feel definitely 10 times more fulfilled as compared to what you were when you were a dismissal avoidant. DAs have this belief, they have this feeling, if they become secure, will it be better than being a DA or being emotionally numbed out? That is one of the things a lot of DA kind of like deal with, but being secure definitely makes you feel more fulfilled emotionally.
That's inspirational. So we know you've been a member of PDS for quite a while now. What's your favorite tool or teaching that you find helped you the most? And what do you think is an important area for DAs to focus on specifically for their healing?
Okay, so for me, I would say two tools really helped me out. First is the somatic work. And now in PDS, we have a course on somatic work separately. When I joined, it was in the DA course mostly. So getting in touch with my body and identifying my feelings in my body, that was something which has helped me a lot. The post-traumatic growth course has been tremendous. I'll say that's also combined somatic work with seeing what are the things you gain from your traumas, which helped me out a lot. That was my favorite course. And if I have to choose a tool that I do regularly is the emotional processing tool. So it combines the needs and the stories you tell yourself if you're having a negative emotion, so that can help you manage your emotions in a healthy way.
Oh, wonderful. And then, yeah, you mentioned your favorite course was post-traumatic growth. Was that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And you touched on how it's important to see what you learned, how you grew. If you don't pick out sort of, I guess, the positives in that event, mm-hmm. I guess you're always going to see it as nothing but negative and maybe stay in victimhood or stay sort of stuck and not able to move forward. Yeah, that's definitely a powerful course. Thanks for sharing. So I know you're coaching. You've got your IAT certification. Congratulations. So in your coaching practice, what are some common challenges that you're finding people are coming to you with? And how do you help them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Since people know that I do IAT coaching, so attachment style is something you come up with. They already have some knowledge of attachment styles. If they have some work to do on their attachment style, they come up with that. There are also people who come up with other issues which are not directly related to attachment style. But still, if we keep going through their situation, then we come across there could be attachment style contributing to it. There are different things. At times, relationship challenges are there, and there are people who come for addiction issues, or if there's workplace stress. These things definitely help. And there are like IAT training, which I learned, that can help me even with other issues. For example, addiction. So there's a habit breaking exercise for it. So that definitely helps me a lot. And I also use tools from what I learned in my psychology class. So tools from CBT, acceptance and commitment therapy at times. So I combine those at times as well. But IAT tools, definitely one thing I found was they go much, much deeper as compared to some other tools.
Right. Okay. So I was curious, are there any additional things that you learned in the integrated attachment theory training, which you didn't learn in school while studying psychology?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say one of the things what I didn't learn in my psychology course is the part where we talk about needs. A lot of the things just focus on maybe changing the stories or providing a different perspective to the client and all of that stuff. Or just teaching them how to accept things. But a lot of it is just focused on some of the surface stuff. And some of the things don't really go deep into things. So there's also the needs thing, which need to be integrated along with changing perspective. We have to teach about needs. The boundaries work wasn't taught a lot in psychology. A bit was touched upon it. But how do you communicate? How do you set boundaries? Those skills weren't actually taught in our psychology course. And even an IIT course, we learned like how to set up your own business. That was something Thais taught us in the last week of IIT. That was sort of very interesting. And she also talks about how do you deal with clients and all of that stuff in more detail. And some of the points were interesting, which I didn't quite learn from my psychology teacher.
For sure. And especially things like setting boundaries. That should be taught in elementary school. These are things that some families, their parents didn't sort of allow children to have boundaries. So of course, when they go into adult life, they don't know how to. And it's so scary and foreign that when they try to go to do it, it probably doesn't come out really well. I'm sure you've come across people who set boundaries and it seems so natural and right on the spot. But I know for myself, I wasn't encouraged to sort of have my own boundaries. So it would always be, somebody would say something that really bothered me. And in the moment, I would just not say anything. I'd kind of freeze. And then I might go home after and think about all the things I wanted to say. How dare you say that? And just think of all the things I should have said. But in the moment, I was just too kind of caught off guard and didn't notice sort of how to properly set it. So that's why it's important, just these basic skills of learning how to set a boundary and practicing it beforehand. So then when it happens, you can just, very assertively and respectfully set the boundary. And most people are pretty okay with when you set a boundary with them. Yeah.
In Eastern cultures, more like mine, I think there is this belief children shouldn't have boundaries, which I don't agree with at all. I believe we should teach, especially young people, to have boundaries and state what their needs are. Their parents should be more willing to listen to them and not react defensively.
For
Like,
sure.
that's what the thing should be all about, because setting boundaries is very important skill that a lot of us didn't get a healthy modeling of growing up.
Yeah, definitely. You said culturally boundaries weren't really encouraged. And just for our audience, where are you located? I know you're far away from me.
Yeah, I'm actually located in India. So in the younger generation, we are seeing like we are now getting more influenced by the Western culture, where
Right.
people are slowly practicing healthy parenting and taking child's needs into consideration. But before that, it was not like that. It's like the parent has to be respected. Whatever the parent says is right.
Right.
Like, the children can't think for themselves correctly. That was the belief. Even one of our psychology teachers, while teaching us, said in Indian cultures, usually at times they see assertiveness as rudeness, which shouldn't be the case at all. And that should really be changed.
Right. Okay. You're leading the way. I know the time there is late for you. And as I mentioned on the top of the podcast, you probably show up a lot of our webinars in really late hours, odd hours, but you're always so attentive. I don't think I've ever seen you yawn before. So yeah, it's really inspiring how much you put into sort of your own healing. Okay. So as a former DA who's done a lot of work on your attachment style, obviously. What sort of message of hope or inspiration, if there's somebody out there who's on the avoidance side of things and they're, nervous, intimidated, because we all know for DAs it could be a little scary and going into this work is uncomfortable, the avoidance of feelings and emotions and whatnot. But what sort of message of inspiration could you give to somebody who might be a little nervous to take up this type of work?
I would say just go for it. Usually for DAs, it can at times be challenging because they might just think, okay, will this work? They might have some learned helplessness around healing. Will this become better or not? Of those things. So just realize after healing, your life is going to change for the better, and it's definitely going to be really good. Being in emotional repression doesn't help, and when you come out of it, it may seem a little bit scary, but it's definitely worth it. And definitely, when you do the exposure work around vulnerability and you learn to connect to people in a proper way with healthy interdependence, you're going to feel more fulfilled in life. I think at times they might lose out on some of the good qualities they have, like having this analytical mind or that drive for learning and being career oriented, being very intellectual. So the thing is, you're not going to lose out on your positive traits. I believe all attachment style have different positive traits. And even that's the beauty of being an earned secure, because even when you become an earned secure, you carry the positive traits of your attachment style along with you.
That's beautiful. And I think we touched on that in a previous podcast, and we mentioned you don't lose your superpowers, your insecure attachment superpowers. They don't go away. So yeah, don't worry about losing sort of all the things that you really love and appreciate about yourself that have, you know, gotten you probably to a really far level in career or different areas of life. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's important to note. Are there any, for your own life and your daily life, are there any sort of rituals or non-negotiables that you do on a daily basis that sort of keep you in a good place?
I would say, like, firstly, I would use the word standards instead of non-negotiables, because I keep standards. I'm not very rigid with it. Like, I have to do it 100% perfectly, and it's a non-negotiable. So I have certain standards in place, which I do regularly. So journaling is one of them. And I at times use the emotional processing tool depending on where I'm at and all that stuff. And apart from that, the guided processes are really helpful. I would say doing guided processes regularly, that also helps. And then practicing communication. I've learned a lot of things, like learning to be more vulnerable, especially from your socials as well. I used to remember when I was doing your socials for the first time. So after meeting people, I used to have those vulnerability hangovers. But after that, I used to also get this dopamine rush, like, okay, I did it. I did something I was afraid of, which was really interesting. So for that, your socials actually really helped me out in the school, I would say.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Yeah, it's funny, you never know these things, because I saw you come to these things for years and you always spoke up and you're always one of the first to put your hands up. So I never would have thought in the beginning that was tough for you. But I'm happy you kept coming and sort of overcame that. And now you're talking up a storm. As we're coming towards the end of the interview, I just wanted to ask, do you have a tool or a strategy or something that you could help our audience with, whether it be in their own lives or to improve their relationship?
I would say there are a lot of tools which I go through with the IT clients and all that stuff. But one small, simple thing, I would say people should monitor the self-talk. So be careful of how you talk to yourself each day. Notice when you start self-blaming or labeling yourself negatively, monitor that and gradually change that habit.
Right.
Because I've seen one of the common themes with most of my clients is self-blame. That is one of the biggest things I have found.
Right.
So it's important to actually be aware of how you would talk to yourself. And TICE uses this tool where you have, after if you have a negative thought or you speak to yourself in an unkind way, you say something like cancel, cancel, and then you change that thought. That's also something we learned in NLP, and that is something which is very powerful. So that's a small tip I'll give to my audience.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful. I remember hearing the stat, we have something like 70 to 80,000 thoughts a day, and a lot of them can be very negatively oriented. So if you can imagine, it's like somebody following you around, sitting on your shoulder every day, just saying like negative things about you, you know, that's going to take its toll. And then the other statistic I heard was that up to 90% of the thoughts we have today were the same ones we had yesterday. So if we're not aware of these thought patterns, we're literally having the same thought patterns every day. We're bringing them over to the next day, to the next day, and they just keep hardwiring. So I love that tool that you gave about cancel, cancel, because the only way to change these sort of thoughts and neural pathways is to stop it in its tracks and then add sort of a new, more beneficial thought towards yourself. And obviously you have to do that over and over, because if you've been thinking that way for a long, long time, it'll take a little bit. But the amazing starting point is catching it and being aware of the thoughts. So that's great. Thanks for sharing that. And okay, so what services are you offering these days, Sanjana?
So I'm offering the services related to IT. So changing your attachment style is something. I also deal with other issues, workplace stress or self-esteem issues and addictions. So these are the areas I work with. So That's something that I'm currently providing.
Perfect. And how can people get in touch with you?
So my email ID is sanjanakumar.info@gmail.com. So that's sanjanakumar.info@gmail.com. And there's a link to my website, which you can add to your descriptions. I'll provide that.
So is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience before we leave, Sanjana?
It was great talking to you. And I think that's pretty much it. Thank you, Mike, for doing this.
Of course. No, it's my pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you on the next podcast. Bye now.